Hey, John, it's great to talk to you again. I want to congratulate you on the tremendous success you've achieved this first year. You've passed the first year anniversary of your weekend show with Leah Brandon. John and Leah, how's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well, and, you know, obviously since we've made the Talkers Magazine Heavy 100, you know, that's about as good as it gets for a weekend show. So we're pretty excited about that, and we've been on the air now for well over a year, although I guess just over a year with Envision Radio Networks, our syndicator. We're on 22 different radio stations across the country. 15 of those are in the top 28 markets. Many of them are Salem radio stations, and including New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Boston, other major markets as well. So we've had a lot of fun with it. We're starting to get some traction, and we hope that we'll continue to have traction and get more and more stations on board for what we think is a really great opportunity on Sunday evenings.
Yeah, well, I certainly do think you'll continue to get traction. You probably have noticed, as a matter of fact, you mentioned in the recent article written by Mike Kanosian, that doing a weekly show, it takes a little longer to get that traction, that word traction, where people know you and they follow what the last show was about and you develop your own environment. It takes a little bit longer to do it than it does with a daily show.
Yeah, and I probably underestimated that a bit, Michael. You know, I've done weekday shows most of my career at KFI in Los Angeles and WHAS in Louisville and a couple other places before that in Philadelphia and Nashville. And, you know, that can happen fairly quickly, especially if you're on a good station. When you're on once a week ideal time slot, we're on 7 to 10 p.m. on the Pacific time, which is a good time slot, but a little later on the East Coast, it's difficult, especially in this very fragmented age. I mean, people have so much clutter in their lives. There's so much media clutter, especially now with the Internet, so many different podcasts, so many different ways to get their information. It's really hard to stand out. I think we've done a very good job in a very difficult environment, but I probably did underestimate just how long it would take to really get people to become fans of the show and for that to be able to expand itself. It may take a few years, but we're patient, and luckily we have the resources to make a real good, strong go of this, and hopefully it'll work in the long run.
In my opinion, patience is a key virtue to being successful in talk radio, something that in today's corporate era, many of the big companies don't have the luxury, let alone the even ability, to be patient. The great stations of the past, even during the days when it wasn't as fractured and the noise and the world wasn't as noisy as we've described, as you've just described, it took a long time for this particular format to take hold in any given market. And without patience, forget it. With patience, if you have persistence and you have the resources to keep going, nothing can stop you because eventually it takes hold.
I hope you're right about that. I know that what you just said has been truthful in the past. I'm concerned, and I'm a realist, Michael. You know that. It's part of what makes my show interesting. I live in the real world, and I'm often right about the nature of events and what's going to happen, what's already occurred, and it's why, you know, people like listening to the program, because I think I give a different perspective than they hear on most media platforms. But I'm maybe a little bit more pessimistic. I mean, we're in a very lucky situation where we do have the resources to continue to go forward for quite a while, and, you know, as we've already suggested, we've made a lot of headway in our short period of time as it is. But I do wonder whether or not the business model of this industry is so broken that it's even possible, even when you have everything going for you, when you have a really great show with great content and people who are willing to be patient with you and you have the ability to continue to go financially, you know, this will be an interesting test. It really will be.
No question about it.
That still works in this day and age, because I have my concerns and my questions as to whether or not that's still the case. I have zero, interestingly, Michael, I have zero concern about the content of our show. The content of our show is outstanding. It's by far the best weekend show in all of talk radio. And frankly, I think it's better than most of the top weekday national nationally syndicated radio talk shows, but I'm just concerned that maybe content, you know, they used to say content is king. I'm not even sure content is the joker anymore.
I'll tell you, John, I don't believe content is king. I go against the grain on that because I'm a media theorist and I've been studying this all my life. I think content is co-king. I think there are two kings, and I think that in a healthy scenario, they both maintain equal strength, and that is platform. I think that content and platform, form and content, have to work together. You can have the greatest content in the world and be out there, you know, blowing like a leaf in the wind, and no one will know about it.
Correct.
You have to have some type of a good platform. In your case, I would say that your platform are some of those good radio stations that you're on, and frankly, a fellow entrepreneur. And I want to get into the meaning of the word entrepreneur in the year 2016. You're working with one of the excellent entrepreneurs in our business, and his platform as a distribution medium, Envision Networks, Dano Wolkoff. How do you like working with him?
Well, you know, he's a smart guy, you know, and I'd like to consider myself to be a smart guy. He knows a lot of things that I don't know. I know some things that he doesn't know. And so we've had a, you know, like any relationship, there's been a few battles, but we've been able to work through them. And I, you know, I've been happy with what they've done. They've been happy with the content of the show and what we've been able to provide. It's a growing experience, and I think it's a good fit for us, Envision Radio Networks. And, you know, I my only frustration, and this is not with Dano or with Envision, is that, you know, our plan, Michael, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this, our plan was if you get on the bigger stations first and you get some sort of a ratings record, which we've done. We've done both of those. We have, you know, an outstanding ratings record in a couple of markets, including my old market of Louisville, Kentucky on WHAS, off-the-chart ratings there. And, you know, as I mentioned, we're in 15 major markets, that if you do that first, that the mid-range markets would follow. And so far, that has been slow in happening. And so that's been my greatest frustration. I'm not really sure why that has not occurred. Maybe it's the patience issue. Maybe it's a flawed concept to begin with, that that's the way things would work in this day and age, you know. But that's been my major frustration with this so far. Again, having nothing to do with the content of the show, you would think, you know, the content would matter. But it's, as you've said, it's really much more about platform, and getting that right platform has been in some ways more frustrating than I had anticipated.
Well, I'm going to leave what you're saying as the statement that should not even be further questioned, because you're answering any question I could have, and the statement that you're making is that you're a very confident fellow. I mean, I could say, I'm not saying it, but I could say maybe your content isn't as good as you think it is. Now,
really?
Now,
okay.
I'm not saying I think that. Would I be interviewing you, and would I be the publisher of a magazine that put you on the Heavy 100 if I didn't think that you were a really top flight talent and your show was good? So I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is theoretically, and that's why I'm couching this.
Right.
I'm trying to articulate this as intelligently as I can.
Sure.
Gosh, and again, I'm not saying this in a disparaging way, but
go for it.
I don't know many talk show hosts out there who don't believe that their show is the greatest. And
I get that. Oh no, most talk show hosts are egomaniacs and delusional. I don't believe that I'm in that category, mainly because my wife makes sure that that's not the case. Anybody who's married to my wife could not possibly be an egomaniac or delusional about their self-importance. Mm-hmm. I also have a 3-year-old daughter, and she definitely keeps me very much in line with my importance in the world. I also have a co-host, Leah Brandon, and frankly, the John and Leah combination is why our content is better than any other talk show, certainly on the weekends, because there's no other show that has two people, male and a female, with our experience level. And when I mean experience level, I'm not just talking about having done major radio in big markets and having worked together at KFI in Los Angeles. I'm talking about life experience. I mean, we have two extraordinary life experiences on which to draw, as well as an incredible amount of broadcast experience. So that's what makes the show great.
Well, has it occurred to you that even though you may have such a great show, that you're going up against some of the finest colon cleansing shows? And
And, you know, Michael, I hadn't fully appreciated how difficult that competition is.
Yes, some of these stations are very attached to their chiropractors and their local colon cleanser outlets. So, you know, it's a big world out there, John. You have to open your mind to the possibility that people are interested in other things at medium and small market radio.
No, you know what? That's a fair point, and I know you mean it somewhat facetiously, but it's also a serious point because
yes, it is.
There's no question that brokered programming, for lack of a better term, commercials, has been long referred to properly as the crack cocaine of this industry. Mm-hmm. And when business models are broken, I think that it's much easier to go and fall back on easy cash, which a lot of these stations have done, in order to make ends meet, even though that in the long run, I do believe that that has been like a crack cocaine user that's been very corrosive to the long-term health of the industry. And I think it's a major, major problem. We're seeing it now, by the way, as I know you're aware, on some major stations, not just on weekends anymore, mm-hmm. but on weekdays as well, in some fairly major time slots and some big markets, and it's frankly very scary to me as someone who cares about the content and programming and the nature of the industry. I think it's very, very troubling.
It ties into what you said earlier, your perception that perhaps the business model in the broadcast industry, the radio broadcast industry, is broken. The business model that depends on 20th century business-to-business procedures and advertising as a chief source of revenue is certainly, I don't know if broken is the word, let's just say challenged, stressed, and damaged as a result of our rapid entry into the digital era and all of the exotic competition fighting for basically the same level of revenue that existed before to be split among fewer media. So this is a problem that goes beyond radio, magazines, newspapers, the film industry, television are also facing these challenges. It's a much bigger problem than just radio broadcasting not running as efficiently as it can.
Oh, Michael, I couldn't agree with you more. And this is something we talk about on our show all the time. I mean, I'm a bit of a media expert like you are. I understand these people probably better than they understand themselves, having dealt with all of them at a very high level. I mean, I've been on every major television talk show that there is, and I've dealt with almost everybody in newspapers and radio. So I know who these people are. And, you know, cutting it out of the theoretical and into the practical, I think we've seen it, for instance, in this presidential campaign, where because of these pressures, you know, it used to be that a radio station, a newspaper, a television station, they were licenses to print money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't have to worry. You could put almost anything you wanted on the air, and you would make money. Well, those days are long gone. And in fact, you can put some fantastic programming on the air, and you might still lose your shirt. So now everybody is chasing after the, you know, half a ratings point on a daily basis, in almost a schizophrenic fashion, and I think that that's a large part of why we see Donald Trump emerge. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has emerged as the likely GOP candidate almost entirely because he was good for the ratings of radio and television and for the traffic for internet news sites. And that is by far the most important reason why he is the likely, although not certain, a GOP nominee, and that's quite extraordinary. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind.
Even if he doesn't,
reason why it's happened. If the business model of media was not broken, we would not have Donald Trump today.
And even if he doesn't get the nomination, you have to admit he's come pretty far, considering who he is, who he was, and what his campaign is based on. A couple of quick questions since we have you. Your early career in radio, you were on a lot of big radio stations, and quite often you were like many hosts who were edgy, got yourself either into trouble here or there. I'm being gentle. How is John Ziegler, the individual, the businessman, the broadcaster in 2016, different than the guy that I used to write about back in the 90s, I believe? Certainly not the 90s, the early 2000s.
Well, I'm a lot different, Michael, for better or for worse. I'm a lot more seasoned. I've had an extraordinarily interesting life and career. almost bizarre. I mean, it's amazing how we have a thing on our show we call 6 Degrees of John Ziegler. I mean, it's almost every single week there's a major news story where there's a 6 degrees of separation between my career and whatever happened in the story. And that's a lot to draw on. We bought a billboard, which I didn't think was a great idea, but I wasn't the one who decided to buy the billboard. But we bought a billboard in Louisville, Kentucky, very prominent billboard that's still there right now, promoting the show. And the byline of the, if you will, of the billboard, you know, because I'm now back on WHAS in Louisville, where I was dramatically fired by then Clear Channel Communications, and then rehired by Clear Channel here in Los Angeles at KFI. The byline of the billboard is now with a wife, a kid, and a co-host.
That's funny.
Which, none of which I had when I was on WHAS in Louisville, which probably would have prevented me from ever having been fired in the first place if I had a wife, a kid, and a co-host, all of which female, of course. And so I think that's the number one thing. I've got three major women in my life, my wife, my daughter, and my co-host, that have completely altered me. Plus, I'm now in my late 40s, and I think I see the world very, very differently now. But it sounds like I'm making a joke, but I'm not. I really think that getting married and having a kid changes you dramatically, especially as a talk show host, as a male talk show host.
Well, sure, because you could see what the bigger picture of life is about and the more mature view. I mean, having a kid alone, it's supposed to change you. I mean, could you imagine if people didn't change when they had kids? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I also think, Michael, to put it more in radio terms or broadcasting terms, you know, you mentioned I was edgy, and I was edgy, but I was never an edgy guy just to be edgy. I mean, there's a lot of people in our industry who are like that. I'm just who I am, and I have very strong opinions, and I put them in provocative ways that sometimes people can't handle. But I think it's a matter of there's a very fine line between edgy and reckless. And if I had a wife and a kid during certain elements of my career, certain moments, I probably wouldn't have gone quite as over the line, or at least perceived, because you can argue whether I ever went over any lines, but I was certainly perceived as going over lines. That if I had gotten myself in those situations with a wife and a kid, I probably wouldn't have gone quite as far. You could argue that there's a cost in that with regard to the nature of the programming. I think it's a small cost, and it's well made up for by the fact that, as you've already alluded to, I have all these new experiences and new perspective on life that I think makes me far more relatable, especially to the natural demographic of talk radio, AM, mostly AM. We're on some FM stations. But, I'm not really appealing to millennials all that much. It's mostly people who have kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's the target audience, and now I'm part of the target audience, which I never expected would actually happen, but has, for better or for worse. And I think mostly it's for the better, especially for my radio show.
I think that's exciting. Now, we used the word entrepreneur earlier when we were mentioning Dana Wolkoff, and you now are an entrepreneur. This is your business. You're involved in this show as a principal, not just as an employee. How is life, is business, is radio different from the perspective of being an entrepreneur, being the businessman, being the person where the buck stops? And what advice would you give to anybody out there listening to this, most of whom are employees?
Very interesting question. And I will say that, we joked a little bit about whether or not the John and Leah show really is the best show in weekend radio. Part of why it is Leah Brandon and that combination. Another part of it is, I guarantee I'm the only show that I'm certainly aware of, and I doubt that there's another one, where the host is the CEO of the corporation. And that makes a huge difference with regard to, for instance, the freedom that I have. I have freedom that nobody else would ever dream of having, really, up other than maybe like a Rush Limbaugh or a Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck, somebody like that, who has basically total freedom to do whatever the heck they want. I think that there's some dangers that go with that, but I think mostly that's a positive from a content perspective. I can go places that no one else is willing to go because I can't get fired.
No, but you could just go out of business.
Right. Well, that's true. And luckily, we have a financial backer who has been incredibly generous and very patient so far. It's definitely a different kind of stress. I mean, the stress as an employee, I used to feel all the time is, you know, am I going to get fired today? Which is, you know, there's not too many businesses where you can be at the highest level and be perceived as a huge success. You know, like, for instance, as a weekday evening talk show host at KFI, at that time the number one talk station in the country, and feel like you could get fired on any given day. I mean, that's very stressful.
Yeah, that is stressful. But where I was heading at, maybe it's more of my view of things than expecting you to have the same view. My view of this is that both the management level, the ownership level, the executive level of this industry does not have empathy for the working people. And the working people don't have empathy for the ownership. When your only worry is that you'll get fired, as opposed to what's up ahead, you know, what does the pilot of this plane see up ahead? What is the captain of this ship seeing? Are there icebergs up ahead? Quite often people get so caught up in the day-to-day minutiae of their job and the politics. So much of corporate life is huddling with your faction, politically strategizing against other factions.
Right.
I mean, hours are spent every week, and people listening to this on talkers.com will say, oh, yeah, he's right.
Yep.
How many hours a day do you spend with your faction, you know, conniving and bitching and moaning or planning and strategizing to keep the other faction from taking over, none of which has to do with the product and none of which has to do with the well-being of the company, quite opposite. So
That's a fair point. I think that's a really good analysis, Michael, and I think it's one of the major problems in the industry. And I would add, I think you've implied it, is that a lot of this has to do with short-term thinking versus long-term thinking.
Exactly.
No one wants to think long-term anymore. It's all a day-to-day survival situation. That's what the Internet, I think, has really created, is this notion that, you know, and forget about, going back to content for a second, you know, there used to be such a thing as a 24-hour news cycle. Well, now it's like a 24-minute news cycle, and that's not an exaggeration. I mean, it's whatever is happening this second is all that matters. Forget about, you know, what might happen down the road or what this might mean for our credibility or our listeners' trust in us, and that means nothing. It's all about what we can do today. And so, you know, I mean, the ownership element, or the being the CEO of the corporation, has been a double-edged sword. It's a different kind of stress, but it does give me freedom. I don't know if I'm very good at it yet, but luckily, you know, the guy who's paying the bills has been incredibly supportive, and I think believes in what we're doing, and he loves the show and loves how much success we've had so far. I'm always someone who believes that things ought to be better than they currently are. And so, you know, I'm a driven person, and I don't like to lose, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it win. And I think we have a winning product. It's just a matter of whether or not this is still a game that is winnable. I don't know if it is a game that is winnable anymore.
That we will find out. Let's all hope that it is winnable. Otherwise, not only are you flapping, you know, your wings in the wrong direction, but so am I, and so is everybody else listening to this. So, it's to all of our advantage that this game be winnable and that this game somehow transcend its current confusion in terms of realigning content with platform. That's the problem. Currently, is realigning content with platform and finding a business model that works. See, back in the old days, radio stations were two businesses, but they were so tightly wound together that people thought they were one. The business of owning the stick, the business of owning the license, the building, the equipment, and the goodwill of the business was in the same location and was so tightly bound to the content, the programming, the identification of the product, that people thought they were one and the same. Now there's a disconnect. Now ownership of the stick, ownership of the AM and FM universe is a very different business than we got to get our programming out there. We got to be on every possible platform. We've got to be on the Internet. We've got to be on Facebook. Every time you say we got to be on something else, you are undermining the other aspect of that duality that was the stick. That was the investment in the radio station. They become two different businesses, and they still don't know it. And that's what's going on right now, from my perspective. I don't expect you to completely digest that. I threw a
whole
bunch.
I see where you're coming from. I mean, I think we're actually very much in the same church, if you will, maybe slightly different pew, mainly because I'm more on the content side, and you're, you know, reporting on the industry itself. I see a similar situation that has been a long time in coming, Michael, which I have been warning people in our industry about for quite a while, where for all intents and purposes, a lot of content people sold their souls for short-term gain. I mean, I just an example that comes to mind. I mean, how talk radio ever survived, or not the entire industry, but certainly several of the hosts ever survived the Y2K thing is beyond me. I mean, we had numerous of our big-name hosts tell us that, you know, Y2K was going to be the worst thing that ever happened, and it was nothing. Well, why did they do that? Because they got paid to do that. And how that, you know, didn't create an earthquake of lack of trust in certain hosts.
Do you think they did that because they were paid or because they were sucked in and actually believed it?
That's an interesting question. But I've already mentioned Donald Trump. I believe Donald Trump is Y2K.
Okay. Let me jump from that to another thing I want to point out to tack on to what you just said. I remember sitting at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., when we used to do the Heritage Forums. I used to moderate panels there with a variety of talk show hosts. And this was when the run-up to the Second Iraq War. And I had a whole bunch of talk show hosts on the stage with me, about 8 or 9 of them. You know, I'm known for big panels. And this was the point before we invaded Iraq to bring down Saddam Hussein with George W.
Right.
Bush. But it was post 9/11, and we were running up to this, and there was the talk about it. And most of the hosts were conservative, as most hosts in this business are. And I said, you mean every single one of you are absolutely convinced that this is going to be a quick war, that this is going to achieve our goals, and there are going to be no repercussions? And some of the biggest names in radio said, absolutely, absolutely. Now you have everybody running around, including Donald Trump, saying this was the biggest disaster in American foreign policy history in the entire nation. But these same people were, even Hillary Clinton voted for it.
Right.
So you talk about being wrong.
Well
being wrong is part of life.
Conversation, have an interesting argument about just how wrong the Iraq War was. I will fully acknowledge that I wish we had not done it in retrospect. I mean, I guess that's the ultimate, the ultimate example of it being a mistake. I think it was a mistake in execution, not a mistake in concept. But that's another story.
But the point I'm making is I'm trying to transcend you and I getting into
right.
a skirmish about details. The point I'm trying to make is what constitutes credibility in today's world when the attention span is that of a gnat.
Exactly.
And
that's exactly true. And, you know, a lot of hosts have gotten away with metaphorical murder on this, making ridiculous promises that never come true, and then they get forgotten about over a weekend, and then they pretend they never made them. And it drives me crazy because I'm somebody, first of all, it's not in my DNA, for better or worse. I'm an incredibly honest person, for better or for worse. And I don't make stuff up. But you know what? I my track record on being right is probably better than almost any other host I'm certainly aware of on a lot of different issues, including the last several presidential elections. I was about the only conservative that was prominently out there in 2012 saying, folks, Romney ain't going to win. As a matter of fact, he's probably going to get beat pretty badly. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, almost every conservative host was fooled, either on purpose or out of stupidity or what have you, that the opposite was the case. And I think, as I mentioned again, I think we're going to see a similar circumstance with Donald Trump, maybe even more dramatically. I think what happened, Michael, is that a lot of people decided they could get away with credibility not mattering. And maybe they did for a while. But eventually, I think that catches up with you, especially when there's so much competition for the customer's time now. And, I think Rush Limbaugh's gotten himself into some trouble, and John Hannity. And I personally think, and I know I keep going back to Trump, I think the industry, if Trump is the nominee and he gets crushed like I believe he will, I think it's going to be an earthquake on this industry, because I think a lot of our customers are going to go, I've had it with this. You told me Trump was viable and he could win and blah, 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 and we passed up all these other good possible candidates for this guy who's not even really a conservative, and now we're going to get Hillary maybe with a Democratic Congress, and all because of you guys? I'm done. I mean, that's not going to be the majority, but it's going to be a significant portion of an industry that can't afford to lose anybody at this point.
Yeah, well, you might be right. I tend to think that the concept of conversation about public policy will continue, and those that maintain credibility will survive, and those that don't will be gone. You have to earn. I observe this industry under a microscope, and I have as publisher of Talkers for 26 years, and I got to tell you, in those 26 years, John, there have been an awful lot of very big names that were considered iconic that people don't even remember were in the business. So, but the business, the medium will continue. There's a difference between personal careers and the concept of the platform of talk shows. It may not even be on radio, but there will be talk shows forever. It's one of the intrinsic characteristics of Homo sapiens. We talk, and we find it interesting. So whatever. But hey, listen, the next time you and I are going to meet, and this will be actual reality as opposed to this virtual reality of a telephone, we're going to meet at Hofstra University on Friday, May 20th at Talkers 2016, Bridging the Generations. And you are going to be, man, I can't think of a better guy to be on the fabulous, historic, iconic, original Talk Rumble. And that's when you're going to get to tell us all about your you notice I've skirted getting into Donald Trump and all that stuff, because we'd go off and, you know, we'd wind up doing a talk show, which I guess we're doing for people who are in the business right now. But I'm really looking forward to moderating that. Harvey Nagler from CBS is going to be the co-moderator, and it's going to be fast and furious. I don't know if you've ever seen a Talk Rumble, but I am going to do everything I possibly can to make this the best Talk Rumble we've ever had. And I'm sure you're going to find yourself in a great position on that panel.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a hopefully it'll be worth the trip from Los Angeles. It'll be good to see some people that I've worked with and against in the past. Good to see you again. I'm looking forward to the Talk Rumble. I hope that your threshold for stirring things up is as high as I think it is, because if it is, you're not going to be disappointed with me on the Talk Rumble. I can assure you that.